I think every community wants to improve things for its citizens.
Next week, voters go to the polls to pick candidates for state and national offices. What are we looking for?
The best way to help the state of Pennsylvania is making sure we have an educated workforce. And the best way to do that is to really invest in pre-K.
And then we also need to put money into education, into public education.
This whole pension issue is looming so large.
The incredibly high static unemployment rate for people with disabilities.
Business development, housing.
We also need to focus on crime.
There are plenty of reasons to care about the election. What's yours?
I think the biggest thing is to, like, you need to recognize that everybody here has a story.
This is Election 2014. I'm your host, WHYY senior reporter Dave Davies. Over the next hour, you'll hear in-depth analysis of the big issues in this year's governor's race and assessments of the candidates themselves.
I mean, I think it fundamentally comes down to a guy who's never really been comfortable being governor.
All he is to 99% of Pennsylvanians are a series of TV spots. That's all Tom Wolf is.
And we'll hear about hard times on the campaign trail from a young operative sent to videotape an opposing candidate's events.
There was only one time that someone physically accosted me.
And a look at targeted messaging in the digital age.
You don't want to waste your dollars communicating with people who aren't going to vote or who aren't going to vote for you.
Stick around. WHYY's Election 2014 starts right now. If you live anywhere near one of Pennsylvania's media markets, you probably know that in the governor's race, we have two guys named Tom.
Businessman Tom Wolf, billing himself
as the Republican incumbent Tom Corbett and his Democratic
Tom Wolf wins his party nomination.
Tom Corbett.
County businessman Tom Wolf.
This was Tom Wolf's first campaign.
Tom.
Okay, let's focus first on one of those Toms, Tom Wolf. The Democratic candidate has consistently led polls in the race, buoyed by TV ads showing him in his Jeep, promising to be a different kind of governor. But he's never held elected office, so it's hard to know exactly what to expect of him as a leader. Our Holly Otterbein spoke with Wolf's colleagues, friends, critics, and independent analysts to try and answer the question, who is Tom Wolf?
Early in the Democratic primary race this year, few Pennsylvanians knew who Tom Wolf was. A private business owner from suburban York County, he had one government job on his resume, a short stint in the unglamorous role of revenue secretary under Governor Ed Rendell. So Wolf introduced himself to residents in TV advertisements.
Hi, I'm Tom Wolf. I'm a Democrat running for governor. I was born and raised in central Pennsylvania.
As it turns out, Wolf's ads helped him go from dead last in the polls to winning the Democratic nomination easily with 58% of the vote. But political strategist Neil Oxman says voters still don't know much about Wolf.
All he is to 99% of Pennsylvanians are a series of TV spots. That's all he is. 25 TV commercials. That's all Tom Wolf is.
So I met with Wolf for lunch in Northwest Philadelphia recently.
I'm eating fried shrimp, macaroni and cheese, and spinach.
And asked him how he'd govern.
Leadership, I think, is really understanding the people you're working with, understanding their motivations, looking ahead and seeing what you could do with the raw materials you have at hand, and then bringing people together to get to where you want to go.
Wolf says one of his earliest experiences of being a leader came while serving in the Peace Corps. A foreigner from small town Pennsylvania, he was able to convince poor farmers in India to start growing high-yield rice. Years later, he earned a doctorate in political science at MIT. His former classmate Richard Samuels says it was clear Wolf was a natural-born leader in the aftermath of a tragedy. Political scientist Jeffrey Pressman committed suicide when Wolf was his teaching assistant.
Tom helped pick up the pieces academically for the students in the class. He was asked to take on responsibility for running the course. He took it over, finished the semester. The students were the better for it. It was a real tragedy for the department and for our community. And Tom was the guy who the faculty all look to pick up the pieces, as I say, and go forward.
Most of Wolf's experience as an executive comes from his time as head of the Wolf Organization, currently the biggest distributor of kitchen cabinets in the United States. Bill Zimmerman is Wolf's cousin and one of his business partners. He says Wolf has an open-door policy and takes everyone's point of view seriously. He thinks that will come in handy in Harrisburg.
It always seemed that whenever the three partners had discussions, Tom was the one who was most capable of forcing us to look at all sides of a question before we made a decision. Because sometimes your emotions get the best of you, and I think that's probably true in politics as well.
Growing up, Zimmerman lived next door to Wolf. He says he still considers Wolf his best friend. I asked him what Wolf's weaknesses are.
If I had to, you know, find something to complain about, which is not very easy, it might be that there are times when he might hold on a little longer than he needs to some position that just needs to change. But heck, we're all like that.
Oxman, the political strategist, also questions whether Wolf's business experience would translate when dealing with lawmakers in the General Assembly.
They're not working for Tom Wolf. They're working for themselves and their caucuses and their constituents. And it's not like they're employees of Wolf like a cabinet member is.
Wolf, for his part, is confident his business experience will serve him well.
I don't think a lot of people understand how business really works. You don't press a button. You don't pull a lever and things automatically get done. You have to sell things, sell ideas. You have to bring people together. You have to persuade. And that's what leadership is.
If the polls are to be trusted, Pennsylvanians will find out in a few short months if Wolf is the type of leader he claims to be.
WHYY's Holly Ottervine reporting. You've no doubt followed the governor's race through a steady stream of TV ads, most of them hard-hitting and negative. Well, over the next few minutes, we're going to try and cut through the spin and sort out where the candidates really stand and what their records really are on some key issues. And let's begin with taxes. Tom Corbett came into office promising to hold the line on taxes, and he has avoided increases in the income or sales taxes. But his campaign has made the tax proposals of Democrat Tom Wolf a major issue in the campaign. Joining us is Brooks Jackson, who spent years as an investigative reporter and was a founder of FactCheck.org, which monitors the accuracy of political messages. He's written about ads in this governor's race. Brooks Jackson, before we get to one of these ads, can you just summarize for us Tom Wolf's proposal for changing Pennsylvania's income tax?
Sure. Well, what he's proposed is pretty straightforward. He's proposed increasing the state's income tax, but only for those who are making more than a certain amount. So below those levels, he would either cut or eliminate the income tax.
All right. Let's listen to one of the many ads the Corbett campaign has run about Wolf and taxes.
It says here Tom Wolf's going to raise the income tax on middle-class families. It's about time somebody does.
We just have way too much money.
I'm working two jobs right now. There's no reason why I couldn't work a third.
Well, it's funny, citizens who just can't wait to have Tom Wolf raise their taxes. Brooks Jackson, you reviewed this ad for accuracy. What did you find?
Well, we found it's pretty misleading because what Wolf is proposing, of course, is to cut taxes for people who are below $70,000 to $90,000 a year, somewhere in that range, for individuals, and somewhere between $140,000 or $180,000 a year for married couples filing jointly. And that would mean a reduction or elimination of the income tax for the very large majority of people who live in Pennsylvania.
Okay. Now, Wolf hasn't spelled out a lot of detail in his tax proposal and has been criticized by some editorial boards for that. Is it fair for Corbett to say, well, if he won't say exactly what he's going to do, shouldn't we expect the worst?
That's fair enough, but I have to tell you, this is a reasonably detailed proposal. He has said he would establish a personal exemption below which no income would be taxed. He hasn't said where he would set that for the very good reason that he doesn't quite know what the budget's going to look like if he takes office and when he takes office. But this is, I would say, as tax proposals go, more detailed than most that we've seen.
Brooks Jackson is a founder of FactCheck.org. Brooks, thanks so much.
Thank you.
One other note on taxes. Wolf said in a response to Corbett's attacks that it's Corbett who's been sticking it to the middle class on taxes and that he's raised gas taxes through the roof. That refers to a gas tax that was part of a transportation bill which Wolf supported and praised Corbett for signing. If you've been paying any attention to the governor's race, you've probably heard a thing or two about the severance tax or extraction tax. Right now, Pennsylvania doesn't have one. Here we have a clear difference between the candidates. Governor Corbett does not want to tax the industry in this way. He says it's simple math. If the drillers get taxed more, they'll leave the state for other tax-friendlier states.
Because they are going to go where they're going to get the best return on their investments. The margins are small because, you know, the investment of drilling a well is quite an expensive investment.
Tom Wolfe says he wants a 5% tax on gas extraction because
that 5% tax would raise, according to some estimates with the number, with the amount of production out there right now, would raise about $1 billion.
Now, Wolf says the tax will not slow down gas drilling. Corbett says it will. Who's right? State Impact Pennsylvania's Susan Phillips joins us now to help us sort it out. Susan, who's right?
Well, that's the big question here. Right now, Pennsylvania is considered a low-tax state by the drillers. That's because it's the only major natural gas-producing state that does not charge the industry a severance tax. And remember, that's a percentage of the market value of the gas produced. Now, instead, Pennsylvania does charge what the Corbett administration dubbed the impact fee. It doesn't really matter how much gas comes out. The drillers pay $50,000 a well each year for Marcellus Shale drilling. And most of that money goes to drilling communities.
And how much does that bring in?
A little over $200 million a year.
Okay, so how does that compare to other natural gas-producing states?
Well, every state taxes differently. But just to keep it simple, let's focus on a state with a long history of oil and gas drilling, Texas.
I've drilled in Beaumont, Kilgore, Borger. This is the best I've found. I'll keep tool pushing on a rotary rig till I'm 6 feet underground.
Okay, Susan, so how does Pennsylvania compare to Texas?
It's a little like comparing apples and oranges, but let's give it a try. So Texas brought in $1.5 billion in natural gas severance tax last year.
Billion with a B? That's a lot more than the $200 million here in Pennsylvania.
Yes, it is. Again, Texas still produces a lot more gas. But the big difference is that Texas does charge a severance tax.
How much of one?
Technically, it's 7.5%, but in reality, the shale gas wells end up getting charged an average of 3-4%.
Okay, so let's just back up here a bit. Now, the Democrat Tom Wolf says he wants to charge a 5% tax here.
Yes.
And Tom Wolf says that that 5% tax will bring in $1 billion a year. Okay, so why doesn't Corbett want this?
Corbett says the low tax climate is what keeps drillers drilling in Pennsylvania, and he points to job growth and the boost for small businesses in Pennsylvania that support the gas industry. He says taxing them too soon will drive them away. And he says in Pennsylvania, the corporate income tax is 10 times more than that in Texas.
Well, is that true? Because that would seem to suggest the gas drillers are paying their fair share here through the corporate income tax.
Technically, yes. But even Corbett admits that he hasn't done an analysis on how much the drillers pay in corporate income tax here. That's because most drillers are registered out of state and do business out of state, so it's unclear how much of their income here gets taxed at 10%. Texas also has other ways to tax the industry that Pennsylvania does not have, like charging property tax on the reserves.
Okay, so Governor Corbett says further taxing is going to cause a slowdown in drilling. What do you hear from drillers?
Drillers are worried, Dave. Some of them are planning to slow down their activities. But remember, the price of natural gas is pretty low right now. And if that goes up, maybe Wolf's gamble will pay off.
All right, one more thing, Susan. Wolf says his plan will bring in $1 billion. What does he plan to do with that money?
He plans to do a lot with it. He wants to boost funding at the Department of Environmental Protection. And most importantly, he wants to fix the state's bankrupt school systems.
Okay, thanks, Susan.
You're welcome.
And with that, we move on to what's been perhaps the most visible and potent issue of this gubernatorial campaign, Governor Corbett's record on school funding. We've seen conflicting claims, in fact, mutually exclusive claims made by Corbett and Tom Wolf for weeks. WHYY's education reporter Kevin McCrory joins me now to help us get to the bottom of this. Okay, Kevin, let's start with this claim that's come consistently from Tom Wolf.
Corbett cut $1 billion from education.
So, Kevin, Is it true? Did Tom Corbett cut $1 billion from education?
Well, Dave, that question can be answered in different ways, and it all depends on what you count and how you count it.
Aha! Greetings, class, and welcome to counting school, where what you learn really counts.
If you say yes, Corbett did cut the money, here's how your logic goes, as put together by Democrat Tom Wolf. You note that actual classroom spending decreased because Corbett didn't replace the federal stimulus funds that former Governor Ed Rendell used to prop up schools through the early years of the recession. You point out that, by contrast, he made up for the stimulus funds lost by the Departments of Correction and Public Welfare. Here was Wolf at a teachers' union event in August.
Education was a conscious cut, was a conscious redirection of priorities. I would not have had those same priorities.
If you're making the anti-Corbett case, you insist that he should have been more creative in where he found cash for education.
Things like decriminalizing marijuana, legalizing medical marijuana, those things alone would stop a big chunk of the flow immediately, the flow of people into our prisons, and reduce the need to spend hundreds of millions of dollars each year on new prisons.
Corbett also cut the extra money Rendell had been sending to districts to defray the costs of charter schools. This hurt urban districts like Philadelphia, Reading, and York especially. If you're anti-Corbett, you also don't count any of the money he poured into the state employee pension system, which is the lifeblood of the state's retired teachers. Your argument is that voters should look mostly at class sizes, classroom resources, and local property taxes. In the last 4 years, each has gone in the wrong direction. If, on the other hand, you say no, the billion-dollar cut line is baloney, here's how you do your math. Rendell should never have used federal stimulus funding to prop up education, you say. Everyone knew it was merely intended to be a shot in the arm, not something to count on for years to come. Here's Corbett at the second debate.
Because that's when the cut took place. You cannot deny that.
To really replace the stimulus money, he says, would have required draining other important parts of the state budget. Here's Corbett at an interview with WHYY.
I had a choice of going back and taking money out of the areas that state money was moved to from the budget and putting it back in, and chose not to. Okay, so yes, that was a choice.
The other option would have been steep tax increases, which Corbett says would have crippled the state's economic recovery. Instead, Corbett says he counted on school districts themselves to rein in spending.
We look to the school districts to control their spending. Because it's there. They're the ones that make the decision how much they're going to spend.
Pension costs, the pro-Corbett camp says, are an important part of the equation and can't be ignored. They've dramatically risen over the past few years and are a big reason school districts are hard-pressed to maintain classroom spending. For the state to delay its share of pension payments would do school districts no favors while putting the pension fund on a shaky path for years to come.
My predecessor reduced the payments to pensions. He took state money out, replaced it with federal money. You knew that that was going to come up short, and he walked away from it.
Corbett thinks the media have been unfair to him on education, and if his platform were a song, it'd be this one from The Animals.
I'm just a soul whose intentions are good. Oh, Lord, please don't let me be misunderstood.
A few points undercut Corbett's position. His early budgets cut some form of education aid that had nothing to do with stimulus cash. He ended his first year in office with a more than $600 million surplus, and he pushed tax cuts for businesses that have reduced revenues by $1.2 billion since he took office. Now, if Tom Wolf's platform was a song, it'd be this one by Etta James.
Trust in me in all you do. Have the faith I have in you.
Trust that he'll be able to get his ambitious agenda through the General Assembly that will likely still be under Republican control. Trust that he'll be able to get a 5% statewide tax on natural gas drilling, which Corbett is against. Trust that he'll get through a higher income tax rate on Pennsylvania's top earners, again, which Corbett is against. And trust that the Pennsylvania House of Representatives will say anything but... How likely is that? Muhlenberg College political science professor Chris Borick says Wolf's agenda is possible, but will require political savvy and compromise.
maybe offer some support on other areas, things that Republicans are looking for, and bargain. So if Republicans are looking to make movement on something like school choice policies or liquor store privatization, maybe to work out some compromises.
At an interview at WHYY Studios, Wolf told me that he'd be able to break through partisan gridlock. What's going to change when you come in?
The new governor.
Just you being there.
I think I'm sensing that there are enough people in the legislature in both parties who recognize that we've got to make some changes. And the Marcellus Shale tax is an easy one.
Despite their differences, both Corbett and Wolf see education as the top issue on voters' minds. So each will be singing this line every day until November 4th.
I believe the children are our future. Teach them well and let them lead the way.
WHYY's Kevin McCrory reporting. We're going to take a short break now. When we return, you'll meet a young man who spent 6 months stalking former Pennsylvania Governor Ed Rendell for a rival campaign and lived to tell the tale. Stay with us. Election 2014 continues in a moment.